Hey guys, it's Alex. Just a heads up, this episode was recorded before the big Wizards leak that happened over the weekend. Because of that, there is definitely some information that we did not have while recording it. This is the problem with leaks, because people can't plan schedules around what's going to happen. So we apologize if we say dumb things, assuming that things aren't going to happen. I think I talked about Chandra could not be in the set for a good 5 minutes, and that's just ridiculous now that we have the card available to us. Right, so yeah. But I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and we will see you after the little intro song. And I will see you guys next week. Have a good podcast.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Moth.
And Kitchen Echo, welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Today we have a special guest, Josh Lee Kwai.
How's it?
See, he has a signature hello. I just make my voice go all different levels, and he's here. He's from the Command Zone. If you guys don't listen to the Command Zone, that is our sister podcast on rocketjump.com.
Is that like a signature, like, how's it? Like, you spell it H-O-W-Z-I-T, and it's one word, like...
Exactly, how's you got it? I actually stole it from all Hawaiians.
How's it?
Yeah, all it's Hawaiians. A Hawaiian thing. So, got it. You know,
are you not Hawaiian? You have no Hawaiian?
No, I'm ethnically Hawaiian. Well, partially.
You are Hawaiian.
I'm what's called Hapa.
I don't think you stole it then. That's just part of your heritage.
No, true. I didn't exactly steal it in the way that, like...
He borrowed it.
...that people stole the islands from us. Right. We're getting political here. No, yeah, I commandeered it. How about that?
Like, if I'm like, Shalom, I stole it from... No, I'm Jewish.
Right.
There you go.
There you go.
I didn't steal from anyone.
I feel like...
Speaking of which, happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, yeah. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy last night
tonight is the... No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Monday is the last night.
Monday is the last night.
By the time you're hearing this, Hanukkah's over.
Yeah, no. Actually, officially for you listening to this right now, because we released podcasts on Tuesday. Yesterday was the last night.
Look at you, Alex.
Yeah.
Time
travel. All right.
This is a magic way to keep podcast. The timelines.
I got to keep track. I'm technically time traveling right now. All right. So today we're talking about Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yes.
So stoked.
There's all this new stuff.
It's crazy.
There's one big one.
They've sixth color almost.
So, well, it's always been around.
It's sort of like a half of a new color, right?
Yeah.
Wait, so should we just jump into that, or do we want to start with the
first? Okay. So in our outline, we currently have lightning round questions for Josh. So. You're going to ask Josh a bunch of questions.
Should we qualify why we're like... So Josh is on the other Rocket Jump podcast, the cool podcast. The father, we'll call it, rather than the sister.
Yeah, I like sister. We're
No, it's like old. They're not 30 years old.
No, that's true. But you guys have several more episodes than us, so you've been around a little longer.
Well, we cheated too, because for a long time we did two episodes per week.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, so our number of episodes, it looks like we've been around for a couple of years. I think you started around our episode like 12-ish.
Yeah, we weren't that far
Well, that's
behind.
What I thought.
Yeah.
That's totally what I thought. But then I looked at Rocket Jump the other day, and I saw you guys had like 20 or 30 more episodes than us. I was like, what did I miss?
Yeah, we cheated. Well,
they
do you
are
know
also
the story?
Time travelers.
Do you know the story, Ben?
No.
Here's what happened, and I don't know if Alex has told you, but we did about 10 episodes of the Command Zone, and I think Alex was on two of those 10 episodes, and Alex was like, after the second one, he was like, he had this huge smile, and he was like, I like this.
I can do this. I can talk.
I need to do
I'm
this.
Good at talking.
And then the next I know, him and Glenn Jones are sitting in my living room, and they're like, we have this podcast that we want to do, and we want to put it on Rocket Jump 2, and blah, 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 and I was like, yeah, sounds sweet. Do it. So literally because he was on our podcast a couple times and he said, I like talking into a microphone. That's why you guys are here in this kitchen right now.
Well, it's remarkable too that if you think about it, like podcasting is such a hot button thing right now. There's so many great podcasts out there. The culture is really exploding that if you trace back just a year ago, there wasn't already a massive modern podcast. There was like some out there, but like there was only a few. Like
you
there's a lot more now.
Any podcast.
A modern podcast about magic.
We always make people mad when we say things like this about Commander in the Command Zone, but to be, you know, true to our thinking at the time was like, there is not a limited resources equivalent Commander podcast.
Right.
And that's not to say that there weren't other podcasts about Commander out there, but I just wasn't aware of them.
Yeah.
And so that was why we stepped in the role. And I think Alex's thinking was the same. There's not a...
No, after those two, I like talking about this subject. I like talking into microphones. But I definitely did research. I was like,
I love modern, and there's not really a big modern podcast right. out there. Well, so that's kind of why I was like, well, maybe I can be that big.
You can feel that
podcast.
Need. You can feel need. And I think there definitely was a need because you guys have really grown by leaps and bounds recently. And I think it shows that like there's definitely like a desire to devour that kind of content out there.
Well, even if you look at like just tournament viewership reports, modern often just performs way higher than other formats just because people love watching the format.
Right.
It's that we talked about it last week. It's the big dichotomy of like make it interesting for watching or make it interesting for pros to enjoy playing it. And
okay, so the reason that we bring all this up is that the point is that so you and Jimmy do the Command Zone together on RocketJump.com. We'll call it the sister, the father-sister podcast.
I like sister. It's fine.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, there's a lot of people listen to you guys. They love the content, but I don't know that Jimmy's ever been like, Josh, I'm going to interview you. We want to know some things about you. So we thought we'd just throw a couple questions at you to get started today so our audience knows a little
bit about
you.
All right, getting ambushed. Let's do it.
Yeah. I think we'll go with a quick, easy first
What's
one.
What's your deep, darkest secret?
Yeah. Strike that from the record.
I have Blood Moon in one of my decks.
Oh, snap.
What is your all-time favorite Magic card?
All-time favorite. Boy, that's a tough one. It's probably Fate Stitcher. I just love that card. I
love Fate Stitcher. Fate Stitcher was one of the first cards I ever owned.
It's a sweet card.
It just seems to be like whenever I've got Fate Stitcher out, I just feel so good. I'm like, if you got a creature, I'll just tap it down. If I want more mana, I'll just do that. If I want to activate this guy twice, then the Fate Stitcher helps me do that.
It's got good art too.
Yeah. And also it did make an appearance in Modern at some point last year. Like, really quickly, and then it just went away.
Well, because it got banned out. I mean, it didn't get banned.
Treasure Cruise did.
All right. What was the first pack of Magic cards you ever opened?
It was Legends.
Legends? You opened a pack of Legends? Really?
Yeah, I've been playing since beta. So my friends recruited me. I've told the story on our show, but for those who don't know, my friends recruited me. They all played in beta. There was four of them, and they were like, well, there's five colors in Magic, and they all had monocolored decks. And they were like, you should come play with us because we don't have anybody playing green. Which, by the way, green was the worst color
by a long shafted back in the day.
Yeah. Yep. So I was like, okay. They taught me how to play with their cards, so I played. And then I didn't really buy any cards for a little while, and then Legends came out, and all the gold cards, and my eyes just lit up. I've loved like multicolor.
Yeah.
Since the beginning, and so Legends was the first cards I actually bought myself.
There's an interesting thing about multicolor is that like it's by far one of the most popular things that Wizards can print, but it's also by far makes the cards that they're like a card is worse by being multicolor.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
It's kind of like how Legendary works also. It's like, ooh, it's a legend, but in reality, it's like, ooh, it has a drawback.
Yeah,
which is why they end up obviously pushing the power level on gold cards almost every single time. What is your favorite non-Magic the Gathering game?
My favorite non-Magic the Gathering game is probably League of Legends.
Okay.
I'm going to say. It at one point, it was World of Warcraft for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it might be StarCraft. I'm a big StarCraft guy.
So Blizzard.game.
Well, and League, which comes basically StarCraft, Warcraft. I was a big Warcraft RTS player back in the day. There was a moment of time where I was very good, but then the pro esports scene didn't happen until I was in my 30s, so...
If your Ducks were going to have to lose in a national championship to one Pac-12 team, who would it be?
USC. That's my other team.
Okay, you would, not happily, but if it was going to happen, you'd lose
USC. I mean,
to
I hate that game every year because I'm really like torn on who to root for, and I usually just root for whichever one of those teams has the best chance of the national title.
Right.
If they're going to have to lose, SC. Fight on.
What's your feeling on fantasy sports?
I've done it. I used to do it. It takes so much time that I don't do it anymore.
More time than Magic or any of the other games?
No, it's just that I have to choose, right? I can play Magic or I can do fantasy sports. Also, I don't love the way that fantasy sports makes me watch sports.
In that
I can't root for my team anymore. I have to root for like that defense and then this guy. But sometimes you're like, I want the running back on this team to do well, but then the receiver on the other team to do well. And it's just like, I like the purity of being like, I want that team to win.
What's your favorite way to win in a game of Commander?
My favorite way to win in a game of Commander is probably by having everyone draw a lot of cards until they die.
It's a good way. Attack steps are overrated.
Yeah, it's definitely not attacking. I mean, I come from old Magic, so
yeah.
The way I learned was that creatures were really bad and you should win with spells.
Right, because the blue was just used to be so much better. I honestly still think blue is better. I still think there's always a way to make blue better. But they've worked really hard.
I mean, like in Modern, I would say it's not the best color. And I would argue that in Standard, It fluctuates. I think blue has the potential to be the best color.
If played correctly.
Because the things that are in its color pie section are
yeah,
inherently the broken parts of Magic.
Well, they just the thing is they keep doing things like printing cards like Voice of Resurgence, where you're just like, this is so clearly a card that is supposed to be good against everything that I want to be good in Magic. And they just keep pushing cards like that, and they just keep making them, and then that's annoying for blue players.
I think what Ben is saying that he is blue.
We move on. Yeah. I mean, we all are, right? I've heard you say, Alex, that you're probably blue white. I'm a blue-green.
Yeah. I'm like blue-red or blue-green.
Yeah, yeah, everybody's got that blue base because blue covers, like you said, so many areas. So you sort of pick one other color and put it with blue.
Right.
Most players do. Because
people like drawing cards. I mean, I've actually... There's a... Killing Goldfish is a blog that he's done a Magic review of every set ever, and it's from a much more artistic inclined view of game design than like Mark Rosewater, which is a much more marketing-based review of game design. And his point has always been that... they keep giving blue things just random stuff because it's Magic. Being the best at Magic in a game called Magic is a weird subset to be in because you're just always going to get card drawing, which should be in other colors, really. Countering spells vaguely should be maybe more in white than it is. It's just an interesting... It just has all these best parts of Magic.
It's also the quote-unquote smart color.
Right.
And this is a game played by people who consider themselves smart.
Right.
So
yeah,
there's just going to be a larger percentage of people, I think, that identify with blue.
Yeah, agreed. All right, here's one for you. So we won't talk about it on the show. I don't know if you talk about it in yours, but you have a cool job, I'll just say that. You have a job that I think is pretty awesome. And if you were able to cover Magic and play Magic for the same monetary amount you make on your job, you could just do Magic 100% of the time, would you do it? Would you switch over and abandon your sweet job?
Wow. That is really, really tough. For those that don't know, I do movie trailers.
Okay.
And we can talk about it a little bit. I'm not allowed to say much because I had to sign like an entire book of non-disclosure agreements. But I did recently have a trailer for Star Wars that came out. It was the China trailer, the official China trailer. So if you've seen that, and if you're listening to this, you're a couple days away from watching Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Kessler
knows nothing.
Star Wars?
I told Kessler today he was the biggest Star Wars fan that I know.
He gave me a shirt. It's got a collar.
I told someone today that you're the biggest Star Wars fan I know, and they told me that the guy that does Jedi Alliance, another friend of mine, is the biggest Star Wars fan they know. He has tickets for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
I currently have Thursday and Friday.
I might have to put you guys in a death match. Back to your story.
Yeah, I'm not going to see it in the theaters. I've seen it like 1,200 times. So, anyway, would I give that up for cover? Wow. For the same amount of money.
You could do all hands in all the different categories. You could be like a coverage guy.
Same amount of effort.
You could like also go to the pro tours, like do all of it. You could just...
I don't think I probably would. I'd probably say no to that. I do like my job quite a bit. And also, making movies, being involved in movies has been like my dream since I was 6 years old. I grew up with a camera in my hand. My dad ran the local cable company in our town. Like,
yeah.
I knew that before I knew Magic, and I always have wanted to be involved in this business. So probably not, but what's great is I get to bring those things that I've been working on in my career for, since I was a child to Magic. And, on that note, one of the exciting things, and Alex is going to be part of it, are some videos that we are putting together with the professor from Tulare Community College. And we're going to be doing these really cool videos. I can't give much away. But we're able to bring, because Jimmy's involved in Rocket Jump, who also does like super high quality production stuff.
But let's just say that during the filming of it, a friend of the podcast, V is for Vincent on Twitter, I definitely bruised his shoulder and kind of took the wind out of him at least three times in a row.
Yeah, which unfortunately is going to be on the cutting room floor. I'm sorry, Kessler.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Vinny's shoulder. You bruised your shoulder for
nothing.
That's the way it works. Nothing. Welcome to the movie business. Brutal. You know this, Ben.
I do.
So yeah, the answer I guess is no.
Fair enough. Good answer. Let's get into the episode.
All right. So Oath of the Gatewatch. So,
oh my God.
Let's talk about the big thing. The thing everyone's talking about, wastes. Colorless mana is now a color, kind of.
Well, let's step back to where everybody thinks this originally came from. So if you listen to Drive to Work, you listen to any Mara stuff or you read any of his articles, he's been talking for years about the idea that I believe it was in
color,
Time
Barry's
Spiral,
Land.
Right? In Time Spiral was the set that they almost printed the sixth color in. That was the one?
There was a chance that...
Purple mana was what he refers to it as, the purple, the sixth color. And the idea would be that it's like a huge thing. They weren't going to burn it on a set that they didn't feel they needed to. And I think that set was already overcomplicated and they realized that, so they pulled it back.
I mean, I feel like that's also something that from every new player's perspective, they're like, oh, what if they add a sixth color? That'd be, and then they start thinking of, oh, and it could be between black and white and it will be.
Yeah, right. A gray color, a grayish purple.
Gray. Well,
a
yeah.
A periwinkle,
okay. But
if you will.
More importantly, they've been talking about a sixth card for a long time. Finally, a few weeks ago, we got a spoiler of the card Wastes. And Wastes came along the new Kozilek, and both of them had this diamond.
It's sweet looking. I mean, I'll tell you that much. The Wastes that I've seen look awesome.
They do look sweet.
The art is really cool.
Like, I want a foil Waste. I want all of the foil Wastes.
You can do that. It'll probably be... Well, that's what's interesting, and we'll get into it about like how playable they'll be in the long run.
I can Tribal Flames you for six.
You can't.
They don't have a basic land type.
Yeah, so they're not Barry's land. They do not affect Domain, nor do they affect Converge.
Or things like, in our format, Collective Restraint, that just counts how many basic land types you have.
Correct.
Well, Converge would make sense because it refers to a color.
Right.
Same with Sunburst.
Yeah.
But it's not a basic land type?
Nope.
And it's not a color.
Ugh.
It's basically Relentless Rats tap for colorless.
It's basically retconning all of Magic so that that diamond symbol is the colorless mana
symbol. Right, so now like Sol Ring taps for two diamonds.
Interesting. So the point that they wanted to make here was...
that there's a difference between generic mana. So in a converted mana cost, there is you need three generic mana of any sort, which means that any type of mana that exists, you need three of it.
And that's the gray circle with the number in it.
Right, and... now, to differentiate from that, there is colorless mana, which is, this is mana without color, which is what every non-basic land excluding, every colorless producing land in the history of Magic.
And artifact and creature.
Yeah. That produces color. Like, if it previously said one or more, it is now diamond and extra diamonds.
So it's like a half color.
It's a half color. It's existed forever. The thing that they're going to do, most likely, and based off of Kozilek...
right.
It seems pretty likely. Is they're going to use it similar to snow mana in the set. So in this set, they're doing colorless matters, and it's specifically colorless mana matters. And I'm guessing halfway through development, they realized, oh, we should signify this somehow. And they then realized, oh, this solves a different problem we've had.
So are they going to errata old cards?
Yes.
Casting costs on old cards?
It's not casting costs. Oh, okay, it's only... Sol Ring now produces two diamonds.
But it still costs one generic mana to cast.
Correct. So you could cast any mana. But
so
moving
things that
forward,
produce the colorless... like that generic colorless symbol now produce Wastes instead? Or Wastes mana? Whatever.
Correct.
Diamonds?
It's just called colorless mana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically you can think of it like this. Colorless mana has always existed. They've just given it a symbol for the first time. And for the first time, we're going to have cards that actually specifically require colorless.
Correct.
So we have 5.65 colors now, essentially. Kind of.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, and that requiring it might just be an Oath of the Gatewatch.
It was just a rough estimate. I just can't
know. It was pretty good. I'm not good at math, but I think that was pretty close. We think it's just Oath of the Gatewatch, although... and you're a speculation guy, Kessler, so let's go down this rabbit hole. Shadows over Innistrad, there's a lot of speculation that the shadow that is over Innistrad is going to be Emrakul, because it's going to be weird to have an Ulamog set, a Kozilek set, not have any Emrakul show up.
So I thought that at first. I think I talked about it on this podcast that I thought Emrakul is going... oh, I just argued with people on Twitter about it. But
it's the same as thinking it.
Right. And I thought that Emrakul... because it's very... because Cthulhu, which is what Emrakul is kind of based off of, is horror-based and is a very big horror trope. But based off of what I have heard, based off of like spoiled book copies of like what the story is, it's just Avacyn is turning evil.
Oh, sweet. So evil Avacyn in black clothing?
So Emrakul is just sort of waiting in the wings. We don't know.
I think they left Emrakul for the trilogy of the Eldrazi story. So it's they eventually want to deal with Eldrazi on a different plane, maybe, and they want it to be a bigger endgame.
So in 2 years, we'll see Emrakul.
And then we might have Diamond Bolas. Mana again.
Right. Though apparently Diamond Mana is specifically a Kozilek brood mechanic.
Here's my thing with the Diamond Mana thing. So I'm always annoyed when I feel like something is created that is specific to one set that is not going to become a consistent part of the game.
No, it is becoming a consistent part of the game.
No, I'm saying old lands that tap for it, but new things that require it, unless that's going to become something that you see in every set, it's just like
it's parasitic.
Yeah, there's specific
it's
cards.
It's like Splice onto Arcane or Snow Covered, whatever.
It makes the cards, like, when I think about Magic, don't tend to think about, I don't look at cards and go, this is going to be good in this format, this will be in this format. I tend to think, like, what other cards that have existed over Magic's history does this combine with in a cool way? And then what format can I play that in because that seems awesome?
Well, but would you be okay with Splice onto Enchantment? Because, yes, that mechanic is only going to be printed in that set, but... for every enchantment for the history of time will work. So from now on, every colorless producing land will be able to cast Kozilek. Which, by the way, to explain, Kozilek is two diamonds and an eight. So it means you can eight of any mana and then two diamond, two colorless mana to be able... You have to have two colors producing lands to be able to cast him.
It may function differently than I'm used to, honestly. I don't know. I haven't played with it yet. And it sounds... The way you just described it, I could see that it is a little bit more vanilla and it sort of meshes better with the rest of the game.
It's kind of like basic land cycling.
Yeah, but historically, I'm just saying, when you put something into a set, usually that is specific like that and it's only specific to the one set, like Suspend or Vanishing or something.
But even Suspend, like, yes, the cards that affected those were very parasitic, but Suspend counters...
Nothing else affects them. You can't...
No, but like they still do things. Like, the cards still function. Like, Greater Garganon, it doesn't matter what the mechanic is. It's still a thing that you can sack stuff to bring in a 9-10
out. Yeah, but that's like the only good one. The rest of them, like, I love...
Ancestral Visions, okay. All of the...
I mean, I'm a commander player, so Joyra is like one of the most broken commanders there is.
I love Time Spiral. It's my favorite set ever. Yeah. And Suspend and Vanishing, cards that I absolutely adore. But so...
Like, every mechanic is what you're describing. Like, Monstrous only works with Monstrous cards... Like, no, Bestow only works with Bestow, like...
No, that's not true at all. Bestow is just something you put on any creature.
But if you just have a creature with Suspend, Monstrous. It just suspends, and you get it three turns later.
What I always say when these sort of conversations come up is that I just like the idea that Wizards is trying stuff, and I don't like generally to say, oh, why are they doing this? Because what am I telling them to do if I say every time they do something new... Then I'm like, why are you doing this? This isn't going to work. I want them to try stuff and fail sometimes because if they're not...
the internet.
Yeah, if they're not doing that, though, what are we got? What do we got? We got First Strike, Vigilance, Death Touch.
A lot of core sets.
Yeah, which nobody likes. They have to try it, and it's not always going to work. It's not always going to be the most awesome thing ever. But how do you find the most awesome thing ever if you're not going into these unexplored places and looking?
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, there's no part of me that isn't going to buy packs. There's no part of me that isn't going to play with the cards. I'm sure I'll be very excited.
Wastes are sweet looking.
Exactly.
Like, they're super sweet.
The only bummer for me is that I just found out that I can't Tribal Flames for six. I was so excited.
So if you didn't watch the World Magic Cup thing about it, they spoiled the fact that the Wastes aren't actually going to be in the packs in the basic land slot. Did you guys hear this?
Oh, no.
So what's going to happen is they're going to be in the common slot, and there's going to actually be two Wastes. So there's an Ulamog one and a Kozilek one.
I saw those.
And
I saw this too, yeah.
It takes up two common slots in the set.
But got it.
For Limited, you will have to draft the Wastes specifically. Sure. And then this is also going to sort of change, I don't know exactly how, the amount of Wastes that are sort of out in the world. Now, they are going to be in the fat packs.
Yeah, they're in fat packs, and they're also in the pre-con decks will have Wastes.
Yeah.
But they'll be not full art Wastes, which
is really weird.
Well, weird, and are those going to be the more valuable Wastes? Because there's only going to be... There's not going to be way less non-full art Wastes.
Oh, that is really interesting. Yeah. It would be so sweet if there's a universe where, like, full art lands of every kind are worth more, except Wastes.
Yeah.
Where the non-full art lands are actually worth more.
Do you guys think that there'll be a Wastes expedition?
No. We are confirmed there's only 20 more expeditions, and based off the fact that Filter Lands is pretty much confirmed.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, expeditions, there's going to be 20 more. One of them we know is a Filter Lands.
There's
the
no
one.
Cycles you can create where there's nine and right. then one Waste.
Well,
right?
So. What they could have done is 10 of those, 5 other cycle, and then 4 of the future site ones, because one of them is because Graven Cairns is a filter land.
Oh, yeah.
And do a single
Waste.
But people are speculating it's going to be the man lands. There's going to be full 10 in that set. It's a cool
way. That's what I think so, too.
Yeah.
And last time they had the have lands. Oh, don't they have to have the...
They're not doing... No one... People are speculating there will not be enemy have lands.
Oh, interesting. So,
like normally when they
introduce them, or they'll save them for later.
Is that the consistent terminology now? Havelands? It's not Tango Lands or Battlelands.
Battlelands is what I've seen the most. Yeah. Just because it's
I just don't like
the
them. We have lands in the same set that actually do battle.
It's true. Yeah.
You have Shambling Vents and Falls. That's like, if anything should be called Battlelands, it should be those. And by the way, we're not calling them man lands anymore. We're calling them folk or creature lands.
Folk lands? Creature lands?
Yeah, just because
we're trying to be politically correct.
Yeah, we don't want to be. We want to be gender neutral. We want to be open.
Gender neutral on this part. Okay, fair.
We want to be open to, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I'm just going to put that out there to all the listeners. If you can, I would encourage you to you know, it's hard because we just said manlands, but
right.
I'm just trying to change it.
Six years of me saying the same. Yeah. No. I mean, but definitely make a concerted effort. So moving on things speculating. So let's talk about those guys, or folk.
The Folklands?
The Folklands.
And that's...
See, when you record in a kitchen, sometimes you almost light yourself on fire.
Yeah, that was the gas from the stove.
Kessler's leaning against the stove. Yeah, wow.
There's not a lot of space in here. All right, so... Guylands.
Folklands, creature lands. I mean, I think it's pretty much guaranteed, don't you?
No, no, I definitely think we're getting them, but I guess I'm asking is what I mean, we're getting a blue-red one, a white-red one, and a green-black one. Do you think they saved these three because at least two of them will be the better two? Like, blue-red and black-green are the best modern colors probably ever.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so blue-red, traditionally, when you put, like a blue-red effect onto something you can animate, like, let's say, like, a key rune or something like that, it tends to be...
Loot.
Some sort of a looter or some sort of... Like, some sort of a looter or some sort of, like, a... If it deals damage, you draw a card kind of a deal.
I feel like they were getting prowess. I feel like you're getting, like, blue-red for a 1-1 that has prowess or a 2-2 that has prowess.
It's not a bad idea.
It would have to cost more if it's a 2-2.
No, because the thing is you... Because it's prowess, it doesn't... matter unless you can cast multiple spells at a turn, so you don't want it to be too expensive.
So it would cost you 3 mana to make a 2-2 that would then require you to like cast another spell for it to be a 3-3.
Or it cost, I mean, who? I think a 1-1 for blue-red prowess on a man land is interesting.
For blue-red.
For blue-red.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean...
It can't be lower than 2. Than blue, I mean...
I don't think it would be too powerful if it was...
A 2-2 for 2.
Comes into play, tap, produces blue-red. For blue-red, becomes a 2-2 prowess. Like, because then you're spending 3 mana to get a 2-2. And if you spend another spell, and it's a blue-red deck, so you probably want to be able to protect him so you don't just get blown out. At that point, you need to leave up, like, 1 or 2 mana. So,
I think blue-red is just too good.
Really?
Yeah, I think it would have to be 1 blue-red.
I wouldn't be surprised if 1 blue-red. That's completely what I'm expecting. I'm saying that I probably think they could print just
for
blue-red.
Modern. But for standard.
But standard, modern's the problem, because Gitaxian Probes, like, those are in
but
modern.
Standard's
where it's not, like, it's not, like, the amount of times you're going to be able to cast, animate that land and get a prowess trigger before turn
That's true.
Standard is so low that I don't think they care that much there.
But also, in modern, I mean, you don't really want to be adding more tapped lands to your deck, necessarily. So, you're playing maybe 1 or maybe 2. You can't play more than 1.
Depends. Blue-white plays 4 Celestial Colonnades.
Yeah, but that's literally their
Jund plays 3 red-green and 2 the ape village one.
Again, those are decks that are slower and more big mana. Blue-red decks, traditionally, like a prowess card, is not a card that you're going to be wanting to try to win on turn 12 with. That's a card that's probably going to, you want that to be good on turn 5. Turn 4.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. 2 mana.
Yeah,
we're on
maybe.
The same page.
It sounds sweet.
Because it costs 3, because it's 2 mana plus the creature that's attacking you.
Yeah, I'll be very excited if it's blue-red for a 2-2.
I will bet against that. It's going to be...
It's blue-red color sounds way more likely. What if it was like blue-red... What if it was like blue-red wastes? Like blue-red diamond for like a 3-3
or
something?
Well, we didn't even get into talking about... Because it's really interesting to think about, now are we going to have gold cards that are like... A diamond and a blue and 2 color and 2 generic mana.
Maybe
like
those
we don't
aren't
know.
Those aren't gold. So Mark Rosewater has answered questions about this already on his Tumblr, and it basically is that it's still just a blue card. It's possible that for this set they'll give it Devoid because on theme it makes sense to do that. But
that those do exist then.
Those do exist. Yeah. We'll have a 2 colorless Devoid or a 2 colorless, 2 generic blue. There we go.
Why did they name them wastes, by the way? Because we already have Wasteland.
Well,
so now,
but that affects two
I'm just
formats.
Saying, but it affects all talking about it, though.
Yeah.
How horrible for modern would Wasteland be? A reprint of it. Just quick question. I think we've talked about this before.
I think it'd be problematic, but I said last podcast that I'd rather it than Blood Moon.
I would rather it than Blood Moon, too.
Yeah, if they banned Blood Moon and then reprinted Wasteland.
I think Wasteland's a problem in Standard, though.
Yes.
I don't think it would have been in the world of mono blue and mono black devotion, but now it's too late.
Could you make it? No.
I think you could do a Tectonic Edge that's slightly less bad.
Conspiracy cards didn't become modern legal. Now Stifle's not modern legal.
No, it has to be in Standard. That's the flaw of modern.
Okay, what are the other two folk lands, creature lands that were color combinations that we're missing?
Black,
it's green, black, death touch.
Green, black, death touch is a
They're
gimme.
All color and most the combination that. Belongs to both, so like
green touch. Black death touch is almost for sure.
Death touch regenerate maybe or something like that.
I think it's just death touch.
Just death
I think
touch.
Just like a 2/4 death touch for 3 mana, something like that.
That's gonna be 4 mana. Like look at
sure 4 mana. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm obviously pushing it as playable as possible. So
so unexciting.
But we saw Lumbering Falls and Shambling Vents, and they're expensive to activate.
True, but I think. But what I was kind of saying is because the Battlelands, because of how exciting, I think they maybe saved the more exciting manlands for the next set. Especially because like blue-green is pretty classically unplayed in modern. And this is what, if they're looking at older formats, that's where manlands have seen the most play. And black-white also has been pretty underplayed in the format. Where
right.
like
Literally. But they made the black white one cost five.
No, it cost three.
It cost three.
Oh, so yeah, you're right. It's Lumbering. Is it Lumbering Falls? It costs
four.
Four. It's five in my mind because it's four and the card.
It's weird when we did our Battle for Zendikar review, we both put the Manlands as the number one best card, but like I can't think of a place that either of those cards is good in modern.
Playing the 2/3 for sure.
It's just because so historically the creature lands are good. Yeah, and they're always just going to be able to see play.
And people are pretty low on them, and the black-white one's seeing a ton of play in Standard. So like I wouldn't be surprised in the long run they see more play.
Yeah.
But I do think the two colors they'll be looking out for are those two. And red-white's the one that I don't even... First Strike, Double Strike?
Double Strike or...
Haste.
Haste is worthless, I would think. It doesn't just come into play tapped?
Or maybe it just doesn't come into play. You can like pay mana to untap it, and it has haste.
Slayer Stronghold. Wow. Slayer Stronghold gave a creature vigilance and haste, and that was the last time we saw a red-white spell land sort of thing. So
but it's probably strike, first like strike. Sunhome is double strike.
It's probably first strike.
First strike exists.
They're not going to just copy. They wouldn't just copy the effects of Slayer Stronghold is my point, because it would be too boring. So I think you would. I think double strike makes way more sense.
It's the most interesting thing to do with it. It's really powerful, but I think like
it's like a 2/1 double striker or something.
Or yeah, even like a 3/3 for five, like an expensive.
Man, a 3 power double striker though is crazy powerful.
But for five, like
it bashes for six.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
but look at what's it called? The land, the green red one, the green red land. Like after the second activation, is also bashing for six.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm saying like I'm looking at the more recent ones and thinking the power level is going to be more equal to that.
Oh, that's I guess that's what I'm saying. I think these will be more powerful than the other two. And I think the hexproof is not as good on a land, same as double strike, because you can't attach things to it as easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. But I mean, if it's three power already, that's plenty. Well. Anyway, you know what we should do is we should read Kozilek, because that card's a little bit crazy and it probably has some modern implications.
Well, there's Kozilek's on the outline. We're going to get there. Let's get to him. but first, so one of the things for the set while I look this up is Kozilek, or while Josh looks it up, I'm going to give Josh the job of looking up Kozilek.
Very good. I think I have him memorized.
In the first set, Ulamog was the big deal. Now Kozilek and his brood, which use these cool diamond. So like... I'm really interested back to Emrakul, by the way, and seeing what Emrakul's land looks like. I want to see, like, is it tentacly?
It's spaghetti. It's just a spaghetti land. Yeah. It's got sauce and everything.
So for those who don't know, Ulamog, whenever he would waste the land, basically, it becomes much more like coral, like a skeleton coral-like substance. But Kozilek makes it this cool geometric, diamondy-looking rock substance.
When he wastes the land, you said?
When they, like, suck the color out of something.
Oh, okay. And this is, like, an art thing or a...
Yeah, this is a flavor thing.
Not like a gameplay thing. I didn't miss...
So the thing is that Ulamog is all about...
It does not matter.
...digesting and ingesting. So, like, the whole theme of Ulamog of eating stuff was his. Kozilek is much more about drawing energy from colorless things. So his entire subset of dudes are going to be about creating and using this diamond mana.
Gotcha.
I mean, Kozilek is originally the Butcher of Truth. He has to do with like ciphering and coding, right?
He draws four cards. He's the one that warps reality.
Yeah. So his stuff looks like it's sort of almost like a cipher or a code in the rock.
When they describe his like weird head diamondy thing, it's like you can't fathom what shape it's taking because it
messes with your mind. Yeah. Actually, the rocks after he's done with them in waste sort of look like a maze almost.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I'm going to read Kozilek. The Great Distortion, 8 diamond, so 10 mana total for a legendary creature. Eldrazi at 12/12. When you cast Kozilek, the Great Distortion, if you have fewer than 7 cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. Also has Menace, so must be blocked by at least 2 creatures. And has one more ability, discard a card with converted mana cost X. Counter target spell with converted mana cost X.
So he's sweet for Tron. Do the Tron lands now produce diamond?
Well, I guess he kind of is, because they do play a lot of like... Like, once they get Tron mana, the one-drop cantrip-y things kind of becomes less of a useful...
Yeah, exactly.
So you can counter their one-drop things. You can counter their two-drop like Pyroclasms.
Yeah, you can protect from, like, Path.
Yeah.
Is it better than Nulamog, though?
The drawing 7's big game. The fact that when you cast him...
Sometimes you're going to cast, draw 7, they'll be like, yeah, kill you.
No, but whereas he counters... You draw 7, and the 7 cards you can then discard to counter their spell.
Yeah, true. But the thing about Nulamog is you cast and then exile 2 things, and that it
it just feels like that's going to stabilize you a lot of times.
If you cast a 10-drop, they just kill you while it's on the stack. You have a problem with either of them. But once it...
Or just attack you.
I mean, this protects himself better than Ulamog does almost. Because Path is the bigger issue than
right,
any destructive effect.
Ulamog protects you better than Kozilek does.
But the counters, like, if they're like, oh, I tap out for Splinter Twin, you're like, well, I discard this 4-drop that I'm playing in Tron now that they don't currently play, but they may in the future. Or you discard one of your 3-drops to get rid of their Pestermite, then, like, he's doing just as much work.
Yeah, that's true. So you think you would play Kozilek now over?
No, I think you play one of each.
One of each?
Well, right now they're playing 2 Nulamogs.
Right.
So I would say one of each of those and then 1 Emrakul.
So the next time they reprint the Tron lands, they're going to produce Diamond, Diamond, and then Diamond, Diamond, Diamond?
Yes.
Yes, but they produce that now. That's the next time they print it, so it'll just say.
No, it's errated. Yeah.
So if we get a set on Modo, for instance, because that's more likely right now than Tron lands being printed anytime very soon, we'll see... On Modo, it'll be, and it might even change immediately. Like, next time you look at your Tron land, once the set comes out, it'll be Diamond, Diamond, or Diamond, Diamond, Diamond.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it just feels like, to me, like, Ulamog stabilizes you in the moment a lot better than Kozilek does, because you still have to get a card. And granted, well, you'll have 7.
What's better, Path to Exile or Counterspell? Because that's the difference between the two of them.
Right, but 2 Path to Exiles and Counterspell.
2 Counterspells.
Isn't that funny how...
Possibly.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how, like, Tron is synonymous in Modern with, like, Eldrazi and, like, giant things, and now for a new player getting into it, they're just going to be like, oh, yeah, it was designed together.
Of course, like, Tron speaks to me because I'm a Commander player, and Tron is the closest that any competitive format, or at least Modern or Standard, has to, like, a Commander deck. It plays a lot like just a Commander deck.
Yeah, yeah. Ramp, 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 ramp. Oh, I have a big
huge
green
thing. Yeah.
Like, a new player will, like, look at the Tron lands once they've a new version out there, and they'll be like, oh, well, obviously, if I was going to play with these lands, I would play with these giant creatures that require these lands.
Right.
Why wouldn't
right.
I, right? It's funny.
Yeah, it tells you right on the card. Well, it will.
One of the arguments, because we talked about ban lists last week, and I think it was Corbin Hausler from Brainstorm Brewery brought up just banning 8th and 9th edition outright.
Completely.
And, like, there's a lot of problems with that we don't need to get into. But one of my points was, if you do that, then you just...
Tron's just gone, right?
Tron's gone, but I think you unban the Locust lands.
Wait, no. Why? Because
you want the one deck that can cast Eldrazi in Modern to exist.
Weren't those so unfair?
Yeah, but I think they were unfair in an era where Modern didn't know what Modern was.
I don't know, man. That was, you could get to a billion mana so fast, and
you can get like
12
how,
of them.
How is it? It was turn 3. It wasn't quicker than turn 3.
I just seem to remember like watching that and just being like, this seems really busted.
Because Summer Bloom is also gone, so you no longer have the
okay. I don't know.
In this universe where they've banned out 2 complete sets, rotated 2 sets. I mean, we know they're not going to do that. Yeah.
We'll probably do an episode discussing what that would look like. Right. I will say when we did our 8th and 9th set review, it was just weird, the entire experience.
Right, because those 2 sets are sort of on the far end of what
core sets used to be, which was like, here's a bunch of answers because no one's drafting this and we don't care.
They are weird sets to include from the standpoint of like, yeah, those cards are not like cards after.
Right.
Not all of them, but a lot of the cards.
And like 8th edition, like the thing is, it's harder for me to explain away 9th edition than 8th edition because 8th edition is so much more of a... 8th edition is just tatched on at the beginning. And I can see them being like, no, Mirrodin's the start point, not the weird core set beforehand. But 9th edition is like in the between.
All 3 of those. 8th edition and 9th edition, but then also 7th edition, even though I know it's not Modern legal, they're all bizarre sets. Like, yeah. I was looking yesterday to go buy some cards for an EDH deck, not EDH, sorry, for a Highlander deck. And I wanted to find a foil opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a foil opportunity from 7th edition. And I was reminded that 7th edition was a white-bordered set, but the foils are all black-bordered.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only...
My foil signed by Richard Garfield Counterspell in Geist is from 7th edition.
Nice.
And apparently it's expensive.
It was the old kind of foiling where it was just the border, not the picture. And it's ugly, but really, really uniquely strange. So I bought a foil black bordered 7th edition opportunity for like $1.90. I was
heck,
like, this
actually sounds sweet.
Yeah, no, I was so excited. It's art. it's art that's like not the normal art, not the new art. I'd never seen it before.
I mean, I think we can agree there's no way they ban out 2 sets. What it does to the format of Modern says, hey, we're going to rotate. And as soon as you do that, I think people are running around and the roof is on fire.
They're better off just banning off single cards.
Yeah. Like Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Let's ban it.
I'm with you.
Blood Moon will probably go at some point. I mean, they didn't reprint it, so.
I threw that out at the boys from Heavy Meta, and they on their show, they said, no, don't ban Blood Moon. So
They're wrong.
I'm a little disappointed in Maddie and Kevy.
They can come on and I'll yell at them for an hour.
Things could get really degenerate if they didn't ban it.
All right. So I have some questions now that Kozilek's back. First off, do you think they're going to be reprinting Kozilek's Channeler?
Kozilek's Channeler? Is that the 5-mana 4/4 that taps to produce 2?
Yeah. This is a slight subtle thing into another reprint, but I do want to talk about this because it's one of the biggest complaints about Wastes is that it wasn't in Battle for Zendikar.
Right.
It's such a big, major change to the game that it's something that you want to be in a large set, and they didn't do it there. And the reason they didn't do it is because it's like a lot to be kind of explaining that and devoid and ingest, and there's just too much in the set at one time. And it like it would have just been there and then not been relevant to any of the cards otherwise. But then you have Kozilek's Channeler, this guy that's supposed to bring Kozilek, but he produces 2 of the wrong mana, kind of.
Does he... He was from Origins? Is that what's going on?
No, he's Battle for Zendikar.
So you were saying they'd put him in 2 sets back-to-back?
Yeah, with the diamond symbols now.
So it's kind of represent the change. It's to make it less complicated
like
in the draft environment.
No. It's like Dragons of Darkir to Khans of Darkir.
Right, where you have the lands become dragony versus...
Yeah.
That literally sounds like exactly the kind... It's a common, right?
Yeah.
That sounds exactly the kind of thing that when they were designing cards for new players that they would never want to do, because a bunch of players are going to open packs in drafts from the 2 sets. They're going to be like, why do my 2 commons that are the same card do different things?
Well, that's
like,
the point is...
They do the same thing.
That's what they want you to do, because they want them to ask, why are these 2 things different? They're like, oh, no, it's not different. And now you've learned a lesson learned through the power of pack opening. All right. Eh. But more importantly...
Sounds like what they don't want to do anymore.
The card that we think is going to be reprinted is Inquisition of Kozilek getting reprinted.
Yeah, that's got to be, right?
I mean, I think so.
Thoughtseize rotated. All we have right now is mediocre hand disruption. You need a hand disruption spell, usually in standard.
Well, I mean, I think Despise is not the worst, but I think we're getting an Inquisition and Kozilek thing. So if you have Inquisitions... Now might be the very, very last chance you have to sell them off
before. $13
it's probably too late.
Yeah, it might be too late.
Yeah.
It depends on who you trade it to.
Yeah, that's true. Trading, it's probably still okay, but...
Selling it to a store, they're not going to...
The buy list, I bet, has already gone down. I haven't checked it, but they're smart about that stuff.
Yeah.
As soon as they saw the leak of Kozilek, they probably... Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, to be totally honest, the symbol for the set is literally Kozilek's head.
Oh, true. As soon as they saw that symbol.
And, like, as soon as I saw that, I had someone else be like, hey, look, it's the exact same thing as the artist in a Kozilek promo art. And I'm just like, oh, Kozilek's in the next set.
Well, we've been predicting Inquisition getting reprinted in battle. We thought it was going to be in battle.
But there's no Kozilek in battle, so that's why it wasn't there. Yeah.
Once it wasn't in Modern Masters 2, I think we all were sort of like, it's 100% coming back later, right?
It feels like it is.
Yeah. All right. So... Last thing of speculation before we get into some Twitter questions is which Planeswalkers are going to be in the set?
Huh.
So
what's our count now on Planeswalkers? What are we at, like 39 or something like that?
There's a few things to keep in mind. One, they said at the Comic-Con San Diego thing that this set has appearing 4 of the 5 main Planeswalkers. So Liliana is on the set for sure.
So then it has to be Chandra.
Jason Nissa are the 3 missing.
There's 66 Planeswalkers now?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Oh, there's a crazy amount.
Oh, yeah, but some of these are Commander Planeswalkers, right?
Yeah.
5 of them.
5 of them.
Exactly
so
5.
Yeah.
So there's 61 then. 61 Planeswalkers. That is
legal
insane.
And modern. So,
it's got to be Chandra, Jace, or Nissa, huh? Well,
except Jace is the face of Innistrad, Return to Innistrad. So is he going to come out with a Jace in... Are we going to get a new Jace in... February, January, and then a new Jace immediately in March.
No, I think you get one in March. I don't think that you get... There's no way... There's a Jace that's too good and too prominent now.
But they were setting all this stuff in place before they knew how prominent
they pushed Magic Origins, but beyond the point, they knew there would be 3 different Jaces released within 6 months.
I'm just saying, at the point at which they're saying which Planeswalkers are going into Oath of the Gatewatch, they don't know yet how good something like Jace is. They may suspect, but...
True, but... They do know how especially because they're going to push him for the next
prolific
set as well. Prolific, yeah.
Yeah, they know how many they're going to be. I'm just saying it wouldn't be a deterrent because of how good Jace Vryn's Prodigy is for them to not put it in another set. I don't think that it goes into their calculation.
I agree with that.
What does go into their calculation is, I think what you said, is there going to be a Jace, like basically 3 Jaces legal and standard at the same time?
Right. And it's not even, it's almost block.
Yeah.
Like within 3 sets, there's going to be 3 Jaces, or 4 sets, I guess. But that's pretty insane within 1 year to have that one character. And he is the main character, and they're
Have they ever had a character who 3 versions of it were legal and standard at the same time?
Garrick. Well, here's the problem. Yes, but it's because of the fact that two core sets that had different versions of Garruk or different
right,
versions
for that,
of Chandra.
Like 5 minute period where the two core sets are in.
Never be based off of like
intended, like full cycle.
Like a regular release.
Right.
That weird standard period that used to exist because core
sets
were printed at the same time. Yeah, yes. But other than that, no.
I'm just going to say right now, I know like. I say it on here a lot. I don't buy a lot of singles anymore. Sometimes I will, but usually I just borrow your modern cards because you have all of them. I'm buying four Jaces of the new Origins Jace because he's so... like after we've teched that deck with Corey a couple weeks ago...
He's
unless
great.
That card gets banned,
he's gonna
it's not going
to be
staple
in every format forever.
The card
it's
is
awesome.
Bananas.
And but it's like it's in a fair way. It's not hating anything out. It's just...
Yeah.
It loots and it's good.
It feels like it's in that perfect spot where it's very, very powerful, but you wouldn't really see it getting banned.
Right.
Yeah, like for instance, in the way that aggressively you can flash in Snapcaster on two and then protect it and just have like a 2-1 beater... Jace is a 0-2 looter that you have to play at sorcery speed that doesn't have haste. The best thing you can
and
do
all
with
the
him,
spells he can get back are sorcery speed.
Yeah, the best thing you can do is play him as a 0-2 looter and then just like hope to get value. That's like why he's not unfair. Because medium game, he's awesome, but like you can't be that aggressive with him. You can't do anything unfair early on with him. He's just, you know, a really good mid-range value engine.
Yeah, that card's amazing. I don't think it's a bad idea to pick him up now. I don't see him going down.
Right.
I got
only
one,
a banning. Only a banning can mess you up.
Yeah.
Which I just don't think is likely.
Yeah. I can imagine a heavy reprint in some way before we see a banning.
So, okay. That's a really good argument that Jace isn't in Oath of the Gatewatch. And it makes sense because they keep showing Nyssa.
Yeah. Nyssa has to be in this
so
set.
It has to be Nyssa. And so is it Chandra or Jace? So that feels like it's Chandra.
Yeah. I don't want to say it, but there was definitely some hint when I was at PAX that there wasn't a Chandra
really?
In the block, which was weird.
Was there any specific moment that was hinted at that makes you think that, or you just got that impression?
I got that impression. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's true, and I can be blatantly wrong. There was definitely hints of, I don't remember making a Chandra for this set. It was like a word I heard offhand from someone behind someone, blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. So who knows how legit that is, but... It does. It's interesting that like Nyssa is the only one that I feel comfortable saying is going to be in this set.
I mean, they just can't show her as much as they do and not have her show
up.
Right?
They showed her Planeswalker art already.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying.
At
the
if you watch any coverage,
at San Diego
Comic-Con, one shot of
we
her
saw
just
her
over
and
over.
Her legendary creature BFF elemental.
Here's a question.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
we haven't had a dominant Nyssa yet, right?
Not even
close.
The five drop one was very good.
The
M15
one.
The M15 one was very good in standard, and I would in modern never.
When I say dominant, I mean like drop. When I say dominant, I mean a card that is ubiquitous or timeless, like in the sense that there's maybe
you only have two planeswalkers that even fit that anyway.
No,
right?
I mean
three.
There's
it's a four. You
Gideon,
Elsbeth,
Liliana,
and Jace have
Mine
all
the
been.
Sculptor. And new Jace, I would already put on that level. He's in every format.
I mean,
they banned the other one.
Even, yeah. I would say all three good Jaces, and even the fourth good Jace are all arguably modern playable.
No, and I would go as far as to say Baby Jace has been that way for a long time.
Yeah, I'm saying Jace Vern Prodigy, Jace Bellerin, Jace Memory Adept, and Jace Mind Sculptor have all seen play in modern, other than Mind Sculptor, who is banned from.
So there's like
conception.
10 or 12 that have been really, really, really good. So I was just looking through the database, and I think this is pretty interesting. The reason I asked the question about Nyssa is like. You can kind of find a version of almost every Planeswalker that has been really, really, really good in multiple formats. So
I disagree with the statement full-heartedly, but you can continue.
Many of them. So Karn and Ugin, we forgot. They're both played in Tron in Modern.
Yeah.
We forgot, and I was talking about it, but Tezzeret, 5-mana Tezzeret has been played in Vintage.
Yeah, but Modern
4-mana Tezzeret has been
here.
Played in Modern and Legacy and Standard. No, absolutely. There's no question of that.
I mean,
true.
It's seen play, but how many tournaments has it won?
Caleb Durward won a Legacy Open with a four-mana.
Modern.
I'd have done well with the Tezzeret deck before. Like at least top 50%.
Touche.
Great. All right.
That's
so,
point Ben,
moving
by
on. Chandra is probably going to be the reprint. There's no other red one.
Yeah.
Nyssa apparently looks like she's everywhere. The question, I guess, is there a third one?
Well, also,
Jace seems
Kiora,
unlikely.
Right?
Well, Kiora's in it already.
So I'm just saying she can cover the blue.
Right, yeah. And often that's how they pull it off. There's like a weird, like one of the gold covers one of the colors, and they'll have that kind of be how that works. I'm excited for that. The Planeswalkers being printed.
Do you think there's going to be a viable ally deck?
after
more allies.
Certainly seems like they're trying.
In modern, there is an ally deck.
Yeah, yeah.
That deck exists. It's not
Collected Company.
It's definitely tier two. It definitely plays Collected Company.
But how many cards does it need to be pushed towards tier 1.5 or tier one?
It needs one more aggressive ally.
Like a really, really good two drop. Like like a three power, like a 3/1 two drop with some like amazing ETB ability or something.
That would be nice. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. Looking at Battle for Zendikar, that's one of the things I expect from Oath of the Gatewatch is
more ally.
More allies. There will probably be an ally standard deck. I mean, they gave us all the signposts for it.
Right.
There was Ally Encampment, March from the Tomb, tons of allies. It just needs the other half of that set. And I think it's going to be interesting, but you know, one of the things I've been doing is just picking up Ally Encampments when I can for cheap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because it feels like, and if that pushes all the way into modern, not just standard, then those cards would be worth a lot.
You would have been correct doing with the Sliverland, and it's a very similar situation where I can see actually allies getting much more support in the long run.
I like a red ally that was like...
Because you don't need the same like place for allies.
What about like a red ally that was like... like red colorless for a 3/1 when it enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage divided as you chose amongst creatures and players, and like 3 damage to you. And that's the same for all allies. So it's like totally burns you. It's aggressive. No, something like that.
Wow.
Maybe.
I mean, it would be good.
Yeah.
You could kill yourself too, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's red.
Last but not least, on this set of like crazy things that are going on with it, well, like, I mean, Emrakul, we can talk about more, but Two-Headed Giant.
Oh, yeah. This is really interesting, and a card was just spoiled today.
Yeah, which was the Octopus one.
So we know a new mechanic.
Yeah.
And they've said that Two-Headed Giant is going to be one of the, what's the word for it?
Focuses for this set.
Correct.
And it is Crush of Tentacles.
Let me see.
I'm looking for the art. There you go. What it is it's six mana for returnal creatures to the owner's hands. Or is it permanence?
Non-land permanence.
Non-land permanence to the owner's hands, and... make an 8/8 octopus afterwards token. But if you... What's the mechanic called?
You may cast the spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn.
So surge is the new mechanic, and basically it's saying if you're playing Two-Headed Giant, and it's the only format I can think of where this works, if your teammate on this turn casts something, you then get to cast this and for a cheaper cost.
So right. It seems totally busted in Two-Headed Giant.
So Crush of Tentacles, I'll just read the whole thing so people can get a better picture. It's 4/2 blue. It's a mythic sorcery. It's like you said, it has surge. The surge cost is 3/2 blue, so the surge cost is 1 generic mana less. Surge again, you may cast this spell for its surge cost if your teammate or if you or your teammate has cast another spell this turn. So if it's a second spell you cast, you get a 1 mana discount or your teammate, sorry. And it says, return all non-land permanents to their owner's hands. If Crush of Tentacles' surge cost was paid, put an 8/8 blue octopus creature token onto the battlefield. So you don't get the 8/8 unless you paid the surge cost, and you can't pay the surge cost unless another spell was played by either you or your teammate that same turn.
Does this card seem super, super sweet? I mean, okay, obviously for Two-Headed Giant it sounds cool, but is there some way in Modern you'd be playing that similar to that extra turns deck? Where you're like bouncing their lands with boomerangs and Eyes of Nowhere, and then you like Gitaxian Probe on turn 5. And
well,
just
that's like in Modern, and I don't think this is the card, and it might be like there. That is that situation you mentioned where you can kind of time walk your opponent and draw an extra card and get an 8/8 and all those good things. But I would be surprised if there isn't some type of card that is just overly good with Gitaxian Probe being printed, so or something that would be good in Storm is another one.
A free spell,
right? So, like, if there's a surge with a cantrip attached to it, kind of like the demonic tutor that we got with Spell Mastery.
Dark Magician.
Or if there's a, like, just not flashback necessarily, but you get to cast a spell to your graveyard, or any type of card like that seems very interesting in this world.
Yeah, agreed.
Even, like, a cheap one that lets you cantrip.
Or, like, make something that makes a token, or something like a cheap token. Like, it makes, like, a 3/3 for... You know, maybe it's like 3 damage and you get a 3/3 if it's surge cost or something like that.
Well, that's a question. Is tokens associated with the surge bonus, or do you think it's just
that specific card because it's a mythic? Gets me excited.
It's hard to say because we've only seen one, but tokens aren't necessarily related to blue that often.
Right.
So there's
a
decent chance that it's kind of a cycle or something that they're doing.
Yeah.
We don't know. What we can probably say is that the surge cost is going to be less than the normal cost. And that you're going to get some additional effect on your spell if you pay the surge cost. So you're always going to be incentivized to cast it for surge.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll obviously be harder to do in 1/1.
than it would be in two-headed giant.
Right.
But
right.
like you said, yeah, Gitaxian Probe, it doesn't make it harder at all. That's just you tack surge cost and then pay two life.
Yeah, yeah. Not to mention, like, there's there's a lot more one drops that are powerful that people are playing, like just a Serum Visions before something like this, right. like on turn six. I mean, not this card, but like a different version of this card with this mechanic. There's also like the Mishra's Bauble, which has been getting a lot of play recently because Patrick Chapin has kind of been talking it up, is another card that goes really well with this effect. Like, what's cool about this is there's been similar things with that angel, the blue angel that's a 4/4 for three. That you had to cast a spell before you played it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Illusory Angel.
Yeah. And, like, that was almost playable, but it was too much of a cost because you could never cast it without another spell, which means if you top... These are great because if you top deck a card...
Yeah. You can still cast it.
You can still cast it.
It does something.
Yeah, right. In, like... I'm very interested to see what we get out of this mechanic.
Agreed.
This seems like the most spikiest mechanic we've seen so far.
Well, it's just interesting because Two-Headed Giant is not the most spiky... thing, right?
Right,
so
right,
it's like
right.
a spiky mechanic on something that was meant to be focused on more casual.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that's always good when they find ways to split the difference.
I mean, I'm excited to just play a little more Two-Headed Giant because I just like the variety of, like, well, sometimes we can play Two-Headed Giant.
Maybe I'll play 2HG at the pre-release. When is the pre-release? 3 weeks? Something like that?
4 weeks?
Okay.
It's the last week of January.
Yeah. No, it's the second to last week, right? Isn't the set released on the, like...
Oh, maybe. I'm used to old schedule. You're right. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think it's the weekend of the 19th, 20th. Oh, jeez. I should just Google it. I'm just looking at a calendar. That's a bad way to find out when the pre-release is. You know, look at a calendar and guess. Well, while you're on your phone, why don't you just Google?
Right. So, but while that is going on, while you're looking it up, I would say, this is what I'm going to say. I wanted to do this for a while, and this is not modern related. This is commander related, but we have Josh here.
Oh, great.
And Two-Headed Giant related, I think Two-Headed Giant is the most interesting way to create a competitive commander format.
Oh, interesting, because
you could do a tournament structure around it, because there's actual winners and losers between matches. You're not like, well, I was third place, where does that put me? But I killed that guy. Like, there's not as much of a... Because my problem with competitive commander has always been there's a question of who really won. Because, yes, you were the last person alive, but if he killed four people and you just happened to, like, not die, then...
No, you really won, because part of Commander is the politics of...
Right.
Of that. But
I think the
question is actually collusion. That's the problem with competitive Commander. Really quickly, the pre-release confirmed is on January 16th.
Okay.
Here's the thing about Commander.
I will literally get off of an airplane from Hong Kong and, like, walk into a pre-release.
Sweet. Awesome.
Here's the thing about Commander, and this is we talk about this when we talk about Highlander Roulette, because obviously Highlander Roulette was born from Commander.
Right.
That was where it came from. You lose too much of the creative and fun element of deck building in Commander if you turn it into an actually competitive format where there's prize. Just the same way that we talk about if they don't ban cards in Modern, the pros figure it out and spike the decks out to the point that, like, there's not a lot of innovation until they change things up. It's even worse with Standard. When Standard actually gets solved, it's solved. And, like, that's the thing is with Commander, like, people are so creative with their deck building. They want to build a Snakes deck, or they want to build a deck around this general, and they want to have fun. Like, it isn't going to be fun, even if it is 2HG, if you're building your deck in such a way where it's like, this has to be the most efficient version of this deck possible, and the cards in this deck have to be the most efficient versions of these cards, because then it's a casual format for a reason, so you can have fun with it. I mean, I don't play a lot of it,
that's the line between
sense.
Casual and not casual, but from my perspective, it's Two-Headed Giant Standard sounds so boring to me, but Two-Headed Giant Commander, where you have your, like there's two generals fighting together to fight these other guys, and your decks are much more varied, sounds a much more interesting way to do something, and right. It's the only way I've ever played Commander, taken my Commander deck and played 1v1, and that's 2v2 technically, and felt not like this was just boring or unfair or someone so, because like, oh, I have Geist, because this Geist deck is just going to be faster than your green ramp deck.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk about this a lot on our show because we get obviously a lot of people who want to play Commander competitively, and
I would say Two-Headed Giant, do it.
Yeah, that's a good idea, and we haven't played around with that too much, so it's not something we've told people to do. A lot of times we're more on Ben's side here, which is, to me, like, Commander is not meant for that, and it's hard to corral it into that space. And if you want to play competitively, there's a lot of ways to do that. There's Limited, there's Modern, there's Standard, and that's what I would say is, those are designed for that ground up to be competitive. And,
right.
And Commander's not, so trying to push it into that space, it's always going to be a little bit clunky.
Well, what you see when you see... So our friend Andrew Brown, who's a GP winner, obviously he's on the Pro Tour now, We got him in at one point to build Highlander roulette decks. He built a wheel. He built a whole wheel, and he just messed around with it for like a few weeks. And literally, the decks that he built were the most distilled versions. There was no
burn combo, yeah,
or creativity. It was like, I'm going to build blue-red spells.
But Andrew's not a brewer in the way that you're a brewer, or I'm a brewer, or Alex is a brewer. He's a spike. And
that's
he's
going
to build the deck to win.
So that's my point, though.
Yeah.
If you're coming at it from the point of view of someone like him who's in it to win it, that's the point. The building process becomes totally different. And that's where I don't think Commander's about that.
Well, I guess my point is not necessarily take the emotions behind Commander. I think there's something interesting inherently to a singleton with a general attached to that singleton format. I think that idea of deck building is interesting and can be taken in ways that aren't always, oh, it's a bunch of guys hanging out and we're just throwing big spells at each other and don't care who wins, which I know is not always the case, but that's like the casual mentality. Right. I think there's a way to take that interaction and that deck building challenge to a competitive level, and that's fine, but I think that Two-Headed Giant is a better way to do it than necessarily.
Yeah.
Well, and what Two-Headed Giant does, if you're talking 2v2, basically, right, Two-Headed Giant, is it takes the multiplayer aspect out. And honestly, the multiplayer aspect is really what throws the biggest wrench into the competitive scene for Commander.
Exactly.
Because you have to worry about things like collusion, which is when I sit down at the table before the game start and Alex and Ben and I are already going to team up and kill the other two before we decide.
I've done this at GP's, where me and a friend where it'd be like, oh, it's Commander, $5 each. And I mean, like, we did it once and then we realized, oh, the payout was so low that
it
wasn't
worth it.
Because
they know people can do that.
Right, right.
You could just spike them.
But like, we made like $5 each because it was like, okay, well, you just play your combo deck and I'll play my deck that's all counterspells and I'll just let you win and then give me $5 at the end of this. And he was like, yeah, sure, okay. And then we did that and I got...
So you're, for one, you're a monster, but for two...
In our defense, the people we played against were playing pretty generic decks as well. They just didn't collude at the time.
So to me, like, that's what makes Commander really Commander, is the multiplayer aspect, more than the deck building restrictions. So if you keep the deck building restrictions and then you take out the multiplayer aspect, that's how you make it competitive.
All right. So last but not least, we got some questions from Twitter, and I'm going to ask it of us, and we're going to answer it real quick. This is going to be similar to last week's episode, but it'll be condensed and smaller and Josh specific maybe for a few of them.
Sweet.
All right. So for everybody, tell us your best level up or light bulb moment in Magic.
A few years ago, I was writing articles for a site called Casual Planeswalker that I think is now defunct, but I remember writing an article about the realization that, like, not complaining after a loss and realizing how to take a loss correctly to learn from it competitively was like a big breakthrough moment. And it was kind of like I realized that at the end of every match, there was always this moment of like, well, if I had played this thing on turn three, or like, you know, if I had just hit my one blue source, or like, you know, he hit turn two mare or whatever, I can't beat that. Like, these are the things we all have done. We all hear it. I think the moment that I realized, like, the law of averages is the same for everybody. Everybody will get mana screwed the same. Everybody will, you know, go up against an unbeatable card on turn two the same amount of the time. If you play a ton of Magic over years and years and years, it's going to happen. So you have to take responsibility for your part of it and realize that, like, it is on you to get better. There are ways you can do it, but complaining about every loss and blaming it on something other than your own play or just bad luck, it is what it is sometimes. Even acknowledging it is the wrong thing to do. And I think I remember I wrote that in an article and I read it when I was done. I was like, wow, I learned something from writing this. That was like a lesson I learned.
Hey, teaching is one of the best ways to learn. That's a really good one. I learned that same lesson from poker mostly, but which is that you have to sort of take all the variables away and just look at yourself at the end and say, what could I have done? That's the way you get better. Mine was probably, and I don't remember when I had the realization, and of course I heard a lot of people talk about it and it sunk in at some moment, which was just have a plan and know, like, at any moment in the game, how am I winning this game and how am I losing it? And each play, does it go towards me winning or go towards me losing? So if somebody attacks and do I want to trade? Well, I have to think, what's my plan here? Is it to, you know, race them? Is it to protect my life total? Does the game need to go long? Does it need to go short? I don't remember when I had that moment, but that's sort of the most useful thing at all points when playing Magic is what's my plan to win this game, and also what's their plan to beat me? And, you know, every move I make, I have to consider those two things.
I think that mine probably was, there was a point where, you know, and this happens a lot when you're bidding, where you like ask for take backs, and when you make a mistake, you kind of try and undo it and all that stuff. And I learned quickly that the best way for me to learn is to actually punish myself. I'm like, oh no, I tapped my long mana. Most of the time your opponent will let you get away with it, but like, no, I screwed myself. I have to deal with this problem.
Yep.
And just like never letting myself get away with kind of those small mistakes to make sure I stop making those small mistakes. Because eventually you run into opponents that won't let you get away with it. And it's better that I'm mad at myself than them, because they're just playing the rule. They're playing the game correctly. I shouldn't be mad at them. I should be mad at myself for making the mistake. And by holding myself accountable, that really helped me get better in the long run.
Absolutely. Oh, those were all really good answers. I'm impressed.
What card from the Commander Precons would you want legal and modern that isn't?
Dual Caster Mage.
Really?
That or Edric, Dual Caster Mage, and there's one other that's super sweet.
You're just getting like all of them.
True Name.
Really?
True Name would just wreck the whole format.
I wouldn't want True Name.
I think it'd be better in Modern than it, less dangerous in Modern than Legacy, purely off the fact that Liliana is a staple of the format more than it is Legacy. A good point. I don't want it in the format. Yeah. I don't think it's too good.
It's for me. It's Dual Caster. That's the one. That's the one that I like the most.
Boy, I'm not sure. I was gonna say Skull Clamp, but
it has to be a card that was printed originally to be in the Commander
only
sets.
For pre-con.
Yeah. I know my answer, actually.
Go ahead.
Duretti.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that's a fairish version of Goblin Welder.
Are you ever going to tap out to cast Duretti, though?
Yeah. You can. There are ways to tap out that late. Playing black normally helps, and I do think there are some good incentives to play black-based artifacts with red in Modern, especially. But I do think there are really cool abilities that don't... There's no... abilities like that in the format because Goblin Builder isn't legal. So a cool artifact, reanimator strategy that he also loots, so he draws you into spells you might need. There's a lot of cool things that he does.
Seems really powerful.
Oh, yeah, no, he'd be very, really, really good. He might be too powerful, but it'd be really cool to be in the format. I don't think he's too powerful because he's a 4-drop that like doesn't do anything until maybe the next turn. Yeah, I think he's fair.
I don't know what mine is. I just keep thinking ban Blood Moon.
Right?
Just get rid of Blood Moon. All right, so next question. Have they ever considered updating the Ruin deck from episode 2 with new cards released since then? Love both shows.
We get asked these type of questions a lot about revisiting decks. The problem with revisiting decks we've already talked about, and you guys probably, maybe it might be easier for you. It's hard for us because there's so many decks. So every time we revisit one, then we're not covering a new deck. And for, yes, there's a percentage of people that want to hear about us revisiting an old deck. That's just lower than the percentage of people that want to hear about a brand new deck they haven't heard about. So it's hard for us to do that, and we have done it once, and we may do it again. I can't promise it's Rune.
Fair enough. Yeah, when it comes to revisiting, we do it a little bit more often. I think partly because our metagame shifts.
Yeah, and you got to be on top of like bannings exactly and right. Like, you know, if 8 cards change, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Like the difference between Grixis Twin and Grixis Control is 8 cards, and those 8 cards are completely different decks. So like it definitely has a different phase. And also if we have a guest that's very adept at a specific deck or just took that deck to a great finish recently, interviewing them about their deck that they did well with is more interesting often than it, even if we've done the deck before.
Yeah, I mean, that's covering competitive decks. We've gotten a ton of tweets since we've put up like several of our Aristocrats and Hunted Handsome and Burning Cocoa, some of the brews we've done. And we get periodically every week or two, somebody will tweet, hey, can't find the list for this. Can you guys post it again? And so I think there's a good chance that down the line, some of those greatest hits will probably, you know, revisit once or twice. But I think a lot of the constructed decks, you kind of just take them as they come. And if they place, maybe you revisit them or something gets banned.
Yeah, you guys have good reasons also. We don't have, like, there's not a Commander GP this week or next week that says, oh, this deck finished first and therefore I should talk about it. We don't have that. So.
Right.
Yeah.
What are the first good modern staples to pick up outside of dual lands with your first $100?
Fetch lands?
But I mean, that's a dual land. I think that counts as a dual land.
That's tough. I mean,
Serum Visions?
I guess. It's just that the thing I think,
don't you think it's going to get...
I mean, it could be banned.
At some point.
I do think that's an issue. I think like Path, Kitchen Finks, like those kind of... Like the commons that are kind of expensive.
Do you think it's better to do that or to go towards like one deck?
I think it... Well, we talk about this a lot. We do think that... I always say proxy first, see what you like. There's flaws to both. There's strength. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to go for cards that are good in multiple decks, your decks are going to be more expensive, but you're going to be able to play many of them, which is the process I went through. I invested in many decks versus some of the specific ones. But
it's short-term versus long-term, right?
Right. It's easy to get into affinity. ish, because you can drop under $1,000, you know, $500 to get all the cards.
But none of those
it.
Cards go but, into the other deck.
Yeah, you can't use them in any other deck.
I would identify what is currently being printed and played. So if there's a, for instance, take Thoughtseize, a great example. Thoughtseize was in Theros. When Thoughtseize was in Theros and it was in Standard, seeing a lot of play in Standard.
Yeah, actually, I would say buy play yeah. sets of Thoughtseize right now.
But it's a good example. Or during the summer when Modern Masters 2 came out, about a month after when the people stopped playing. I mean, like now is actually a good time. You go and you identify what are the cards that I see here that are, these are safe. These are sort of the faces of the format. They're everywhere. And they're at their lowest because they're in Standard. So I should get them now. Like Thoughtseize, when it was at the, you know, Standard was going to rotate. If you could have identified at that moment,
right?
Okay, I should just go get four of these because this is going to be a card that's always played in Modern. It's always going to be a four of in tons of the decks, and it's a good chance that if I buy four now, a year from now, if I don't want these anymore, I'll be able to get at least my value, if not double the value.
Correct.
And that's the best way to approach it because the thing is, Modern is...
buying a bunch of the commons is also like getting Lightning Bolts, getting Path. That's what I was saying, Path. Like all these cards are not are expensive, but for $100, you can get your place in a Path, Kitchen Finks, Lightning Bolt. Thoughtseize is even, like, there's a lot of cards you can get your hands on that you're just going to need forever.
Here's my only problem with that.
You might spend $100 and you still can't play Modern.
Well, but like, there's but here's currently the no way to spend $100 and play Modern.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I guess, like, invent a brew that costs $5, but, like...
Here's the best example I'll give you. So when we, you know, I referenced it a couple times on the show, Highlander Roulette, right? It's a format that the point is every card in your deck is supposed to be foil. So the building restrictions are that every card has to have a foil version. But you can play proxies because it's a casual format for us. Most of us, the vast majority of our decks are just printed proxies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, periodically you go through and you replace them with real cards. Occasionally I'll go online, I'll place an order on one of these major websites, you know, spend $100 or $200 and just try to fill out several of the decks. The rule is, if I can get the foil for cheap enough, I'll get it. If I can't, I'll get the regular card. And if the regular card's too expensive, I'll just skip it because it's not worth it as a casual format. Problem is, what you find is you spend $1, $2, $3 on all these lower cost foils. In the end of the day, you look at your collection and none of them are worth anything because no one's going to pay you for foil, you know, Reckless Spite. Like, the bottom line is, if you're going to buy...
but, like, buying a foil Reckless Spite versus buying a Path to Exile, my Path investment's just a way better investment.
No, because let me tell you this. I don't think right spending now. $3, $4, and $5 on single cards in Modern, long term, if you're going to have to sell those cards back off to get your money back to buy other things in Modern, makes anywhere near as much sense as spending, like... $100 on four copies of one staple that will probably maintain the value because getting 25 for a card you spent 25 on versus getting three for a card you spent three on is totally different. It's the Path to Exile is everywhere. It has a stable value, right? It has a stable value that like you'll have to spend that much, but the vendors have so many Path to Exiles, they're not going to buy your Path to Exile for anywhere near as much as they'd buy your Arid Mesa for.
Okay, fair enough. Josh. What is the secret to opening up all of the expeditions?
How many did you open?
Well, it's not me. The secret is have your girlfriend open the packs. Because let me just tell you, for you gentlemen out there, if you are a lady, then you should open your own. Because they call it lady luck. They don't call it dude luck. So I let my girlfriend, Elle, open all the packs of Battle for Zendikar. And I think we're at 12 now.
I thought was a gender neutral podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, she has, it's Lady Luck. I didn't name it that. Sorry, guys, you don't have as good a luck.
What do you think the price of foil wastes are going to be?
They're going to be high.
More than 10?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what point on the timeline you're talking about here. If you're talking about a year out, then maybe.
Well, so here's, I mean, this is a question that I think we didn't really answer, I guess, but what real use are wastes? I mean, there will be useful for the, like, if you want to just play the all Eldrazi deck theoretically, but like in reality, in Commander, I guess that's the main place.
Commander. And the problem right now with colorless decks in Commander, so if you've got like Karn or Kozilek,
right.
Ulamog as your commander, then you have to cobble together this weird mana base that's mostly like non-basics that tap.
And do something.
Ghost quarters that. And you can get totally hosed by things that destroy all non-basics and things like that.
Right,
and
okay.
So you really would want wastes in most of those cases. So I can see the foil waste being like really... And there's not going to be that many of them because we've only got this one set right now. So I think they're probably going to be worth quite a bit. I would pick up foil wastes for under $10 all day long.
Okay. At the pre-release, if you can get foil waste for cheap, do it.
What are the top five Masters of Modern top 10 episodes?
The artifact one is number one.
The Spellskite episode?
Because the Spellskite episode is like got to be number one.
We had, okay. There was an episode recently, one of our best. It was the White Cards episode, I think. And it was because we did the White Cards episode had the same thing as the duel of who's, what was it? Like,
I don't remember the White episode.
No, this is the Oriok Champion episode.
No, that was top
Mirrodin?
Mirrodin cards.
Okay, most Mirrodin influential really Mirrodin good. Cards. And then it also had the duel, right? We each had to defend one crappy card that we wanted to see.
Yes. Yeah.
And plunge into darkness, lost to spoils from the vault, and that was how you got dinner off me.
That was which you haven't bought me yet. I'm hungry.
Yeah, by got you meant should have.
Yeah,
got.
Yeah. You have IOU.
sure.
All right. Is there an archetype other than elves that is competitive in both Commander and Modern?
Good question.
Yeah, it's the Tron colorless,
like, just green rampish kind of.
Yeah, and there's definitely colorless Eldrazi ramp decks in Commander, and there's a colorless Eldrazi ramp deck in.
And I think blue red control combo has always been a thing in Command. Like twin is the combo, but like in reality, it's a bunch of good blue red cards that eventually they combo out, and like that's what Niv Mizzet decks have been since the beginning of the format.
Niv Mizzet, Ophidian Eye, that's just like a thing all the time.
I would say that I almost want to say other than the hyper aggressive burn strategies. I've played almost against every single Modern archetype as an EDH deck at some point.
Yeah, I
Craig
think
has
that's
25
fair.
Infect decks at this point.
Oh my god! Oh, Infect, of course. That's
there's definitely a bunch of like
he pared it down. I think he's only got like 9 now. He said,
okay,
yeah,
Affinity
only 9 Infect decks. Affinity is basically like an artifact based deck, which definitely we have.
Yeah, so sure. I definitely think there are
Scapeshift. I'm sure.
Scapeshift not as much.
Cool. The problem with Scapeshift is if you catapult Scapeshift as a ramp control deck, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure ramp control. Scapeshift. But there's the problem with Scapeshift is you can't kill everyone. You can only kill one player.
Oh.
It makes it much more difficult.
As a combo deck based around Scapeshift, no. As Scapeshift
as a card?
Good card in this format, sure. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Played in Borgrimus because then I get all my lands in my graveyard that I then can reanimate with the thing and then throw people's face. All right. So yeah, that's it for the questions. I want to think. Yeah, that's it for the episode.
Woohoo! We made it.
Kind of a long episode because we kind of rambled at different times, but
okay.
It was fun. I want to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am personally at Kes Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Josh Lee Kwai. You can follow the Command Zone at CommandCast. You can also find us right next to the Masters of Modern podcast under the podcast tab
on RocketJump.com. Yeah, that's our home.
Rocket
we
Jump,
live there.
The show. On Hulu. It's been out now for a few weeks.
Two? Three?
There's three episodes out now, I think.
There might be four by the time you're hearing this.
There are three episodes out tomorrow, because today is Tuesday for you listeners.
Oh, right.
The episode comes out on Wednesdays on Hulu.
And you should definitely be checking it out. That show is really good. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I like to plug now is I do an action movie podcast called Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. We've been doing like 35 episodes now. We're gonna hit 2 million views by the end of this year, which is exciting for us.
Wow, yeah.
And, nice. We just sit around and we talk about the sweetest lines in the sweetest action movies. And we have all kinds of charts and rating things. So check that out at AMA Podcast.
Great.
Very cool.
Thanks,
cool.
Josh, for coming by.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. Have a good day, guys. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the MMCast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.